Now everybody that knows me knows that I've got a soft spot for the portal. I used to be a big WebSphere portal guy, and I still do a lot of WebSphere portal engagements, but I think it was back in 2009 at the Exhibitor Expo at Java 1, where I got a 1 gig memory stick with a very small, maybe 20 or 30 meg file for installing LifeRay Portal, and I simply didn't believe that such a thing was possible. So I gave it a try, I did the installation, and I was just amazed at both the functionality that came out of the box of LifeRay Portal and how thin and lightweight it was compared to something like WebSphere Portal and even some of the offerings from JBoss. So since then, I've probably gone from being a big advocate of WebSphere Portal to being a fairly big advocate of LifeRay Portal. LifeRay relatively recently came out with LifeRay 7, which has a fantastic new approach to doing mobile. And they've also produced a couple of other interesting user engagement offerings. So I managed to get Julio Camarero and Ray Auger, a leading architect with LifeRay Portal, on the phone to talk about what was going on with their user engagement tools, as well as what's new with LifeRay Portal 7. So Ray, what's going on with LifeRay?
One of the big pushes that we have for LifeRay 7 is just doing basically a massive improvement on the maintainability, extensibility of the platform, and basically being able to boil it down to the feature set you needed. And, you know, in order to solve those or to address that, we're doing a massive push towards modularity, which functionally won't be representative as a whole new set of features. It will, but it will be much more intrinsic in the sense that you can take functionality away or you can add functionality dynamically to your system. Being said, is most of the work, or you know, probably 80% of the work won't necessarily be forward facing. It's changes in the architecture of the platform. You know, ramping up developers to new development paradigms, and so what it's leading us to, however, is a huge improvement in the quality of the product. So we're removing you know, this technical debt that we've been, you know, that has mounted over the last decade, and we're basically spending a significant energy paying it back. This, you know, it's kind of hard to say exactly what the payoff will be for customers, but it's going to be mostly around the quality, the maintenance, the regularity of which we'll be able to release improvements, the reduction of, you know, security issues. And then beyond that, once we have all of this work done, or a significant part of it done, will mean a much higher rate of improvement. So traditionally, we've had like this 1.5 to 2 year release cycle where, you know, boom, a new product would come out. It had, you know, X number of features. What we're trying to change is to this kind of, I don't want to say continuous delivery, but it's going to be a continuous deliverable that we'll be able to return to our customers. And that's, to me, that's the ultimate goal for this year, will be to achieve that kind of place where we can have new functionality coming out on a much more regular basis. The content targeting is an example of this, and Julio can talk to you about his experiences with what this intrinsic change has enabled content targeting team to be able to achieve. And we want to extend this throughout many other vertical aspects of the portal.
So given your journey towards modularity and continuous deployment and sort of all of these strides that you made, what types of lessons have you learned that you think might be valuable for others in enterprise organizations to take note of?
Less is more. It's probably the single most valuable lesson, or actually not, I would say the most difficult lesson that I've learned is that developers believe themselves to be, you know, the kind of omnipotent, I can do anything, and this is really true, but there has to be significant boundaries to that, you know, decision-making process. You kind of have to look really, really closely at what you're trying to achieve, and in fact, you have to push yourself to limit the kind of the world that you're living in, the domain that you're working on at the time. And when you do this, there are significant benefits, such as, you know, maintaining focus, much less skew in what you're trying to deliver. So really do less and do what you're doing less of much better. Spend a lot more time thinking about it and thinking through the ramifications. So, I mean, this is not a new lesson. This is an old lesson, you know, that anyone with significant maturity in software would tell you is a no-brainer. But as a young company, and I still consider life a young company, we basically had to learn the hard way.
Do you think sort of reining in the scope and focusing is more of a challenge for A, an open source type of tool, and B, an environment where your developer base is distributed around the country, if not around the world?
Absolutely. So we kind of had this environment effectively for the first decade of LifeRay. So, you know, LifeRay has been around since 2000. Went commercial in 2002 or 2003. I can't remember exactly which, maybe 2004. Anyways, since that time, we basically had a pool of developers, and this pool of developers was just continuously growing thing with not real individual teams. Everyone could pretty much touch any part of the system. And this was really good because it meant you were pretty nimble in what how you could transition, you know, work around, you could shift people around fairly easily, and everyone kind of knew everything that was going on. But at a certain point, you know, we reached the million lines of code, it's X millions of lines of code, you know, it's debatable whether it's 4 or 6 at this point. I've heard different numbers, but it's minimally 4 million lines of code, and that's, you know, there's a debate whether that's a good metric. However, it's a really complex system. And at a certain point, we just couldn't wrap our heads around what was going on when you shifted your focus or attempted to shift your focus into one area of the application. And you could basically negotiate for a certain number of people to work in this area. There was no real oversight and no real control into what was going on in the rest of the product. And that was a really difficult challenge for many years. We struggled with this and being able to say, hey guys, we really have to think about this aspect of our software. This is what customers want. This is what, you know, our support want. This is what sales want. And let's try to do just that and do it in a short order so that we can deliver quickly and then move on to another thing. So we really struggled with this for a long time. And now that, and it's really a side effect of our modularity, you know, the whole, I'm trying to remember which law it is that's been discussed recently where your application is structured like your organization is structured. This was the reality for us. We basically had one large team, and it was continuously growing. And we had one large product, which itself was continuously growing. So the two things emulated each other. And once we started to realize, hey, we need to in just the people alone, in order to be able to manage the people alone, we really have to fragment this up into the logical groups, you know, teams that are specific to certain areas of the product. And when we didn't have software that was built this way, it was a really big challenge to break the teams up to operate that way. So our effort is in breaking the software up to emulate the organization so that we can scale and we can improve the quality and we can have real experts in real vertical domains really leading and really putting their best efforts into all of those specific parts of the product so that they can have the highest quality, we can have the best user experience and so on. And that's exactly what's happening, particularly with the content targeting and why that for us we're seeing it such a success story right now.
When you look at the demographics of contributors to LifeRay, kind of what's the breakdown of actual full-time LifeRay employees doing development compared to full-time people from partners to people hacking out a couple lines of code in their basement when they come home from work? Have you ever looked at the demographics of that and kind of got a handle on how that breaks down?
I don't have any numbers, and I think James would be the best person to answer that. But if I had to guess, and I think I would be probably relatively accurate, guess is that I wouldn't say that there's more than about a 10% a non-LifeRay contribution to the product on, I'd say, a yearly basis. If we reach 10%, that would probably be significant. This is actually one of the areas where I think we've actually struggled with, and we've lost over the past, you know, 7 or 8 years. I recall in the beginning, we had significant external contribution. I would say probably around the 50, 60, even 70% range at one point. And this is what was allowing the product to really grow and to go into new areas and really led us to have a lot of momentum. Debatable on the quality, but nonetheless, we were getting lots of features, lots of interest. And obviously what this spurs is the developer interest. And developers like to build things. They like to get their foot in, and they like to contribute, and they like to see their contributions be put to use. And it, you know, it makes them feel like they have value. It's good for the morale. It's good for their, you know, CVs. It's good for their reputations to participate in an open source product. And I think at a certain point, it was the same problem we had. We had such a large team. We had such a large code base. And we were probably a little bit nervous about letting people who were inexperienced or less experienced touch things that we ourselves saw as a little bit fragile. So there was a decline for several years where the amount of external contributions dwindled to a fairly low number. And this, I felt personally, was a really big loss. But I could understand at the same time that it was really something we needed to resolve, in the sense that we did have these sensitive places in our product. We did have this code that was older, and we needed to restructure it. We needed to re-implement the architecture so that we could have understandable bits that external people could really get their head around and then contribute back to those. And I think we're seeing those in some of the smaller projects and peripheral projects that LifeRay has, you know, the Alloy UI, the LifeRay faces, even these, what Julio mentioned, the LifeRay screens. These smaller projects are much more consumable for external developers because they represent an idea that a developer can wrap their head around. Whereas right now, LifeRay Core is such a massive it's such a massive thing. Even our core architects at a certain time have difficulty and significant challenges navigating their way around resolving issues. And so it's really dangerous to say, oh, you know, this guy sent us this really good set of functionality. Who's going to take care of it? Who's going to address it? Who's going to review it? What are we going to do? We even want to go this direction? Are we making massive changes in this area? We don't, you know, it was just so hard to get a hold of it. Now, when we, on this journey towards modularity, to me, it solves so many problems in our business model, in our community, in our open source model. We are breaking down those really massive bits into individually consumable, you know, things that you can fit inside your brain and reason about. And once those are individual pieces, I believe and I hope that we can, you know, inspire external developers to come back and say, hey, you know, this bit, I'm interested in just this one piece. I really can wrap my head around it. And so I'm going to start to contribute. And we, like I said before, we see this behavior in some of our peripheral projects, some of our smaller projects. And we're really trying to bring that back into the core. So this, you know, it's a multifaceted reason for why we're doing our modularity, and that's definitely one of them.
So we're now in a new year. What do you think the ongoing trends are going to be for 2015 and beyond?
I think that cloud is becoming pervasive and is going to be the dominant, you know, infrastructure, the way of, you know, presenting your infrastructure and your applications. And so with the cloud come services, with mobile come services, so service-oriented architecture, I know that it's so is kind of a dead term, but realistically, that's what cloud is effectively about, whether you're delivering an application or infrastructure or whatever as a service. You know, it's the as-a-service part and the services themselves that are the critical part of the equation. Typically, when you're assembling something in the cloud, you have, you know, a collection of services that you're either presenting to multitude of different end user clients. Not only that, but you're combining those kind of like a mashup to build applications. So it's really the services aspect that we're seeing being represented by, you know, the Docker, you know, the Docker trend, you know, containerization, the death of app servers, microservices. All of this is really driven by the need for being able to individually scale services, being able to monitor and define services and combine them and reuse them, maintain them over time, be able to change them without having to redeploy. So there's going to be, you know, on-premise is going to have on-premise installations of products is going to have a real battle. I think the monolithic application we know has been dead for a long time, and the reason is because of the cost of maintenance, the cost of infrastructure, the cost of change, and the slow rate at which it improves. And so, like Julio said, where you want engagement and where you need to have immediate feedback for how your users be interacting with some application, that's typically going to have to also be reflected all the way through the back end, where the infrastructure has to itself be adaptable. You need to deliver functionality very quickly. You can't have these long 1-2 year release cycles anymore. People want to have user feedback on the changes that they make virtually immediately. So you want to be developing and almost immediately getting feedback for it. And that's going to be a challenge for those companies and those products which are not pure services on the web. So we we have a difficult time comparing ourselves to something like, I don't want to go too big here, but let's say, Microsoft, Google Docs specifically, Google Docs, they or any application of that nature, they can change at the drop of a hat because they're completely off-premise. There's no installation to this type of application. And Liferay is challenged with being an on-premise application. And there are still significant use cases for on-premise application, but at the same time, those very same customers want to have the benefit of what a cloud type of application gives them, which is the immediate reflection of new functionality in the product without having to wait, without having to go through massive redeploy cycles and upgrade processes. We want to be able to deliver functionality quickly to our clients in the same way that you would expect to find them in a cloud-based application, as an application, or as some hosted service on the cloud would do. So I think all of the on-premise type of applications are going to start to look a lot more and deliver functionality much more like they would in the cloud. And that kind of means that you can take this same on-premise application and potentially deploy it in the cloud and get the same level of functionality. So, whether we get to the point where you, at the click of a button, you can say, okay, pull this application or push this application from an on-premise, from a private cloud, from an on-premise installation into a cloud seamlessly because I can no longer afford the maintenance cost of doing it myself. And at the click of a button, I go to a hosted service and I don't lose any functionality. All of the technical changes are done for me, that I can see this type of thing happening much more. Or even just switching from one provider to another. I'm on this cloud provider, I need to switch to another cloud provider, and at the click of a button, there's some magical integration there that says, just move it over, just like you would transfer your domain from one host to another. You were going to see this type of thing with applications. You're going to see all of this containerization, this cloudiness be pulled into on-premise based applications. And then at the same time, there's the development side of it is still our mainstay. So we very much realize that the main bread and butter of Liferay is not necessarily its out-of-the-box deliverables. That is a significant part, but there's still a really massive part, a really massive focus on the extensibility of the platform, the integration part, the pulling in your functionality into the Liferay portal experience so that you can avoid doing a whole bunch of work that already exists and just pull in the functionality that you need, and making that whole bit easier. You're going to see particularly, just like an example of the content targeting that Julio's working on itself is the first time that Liferay can build an add-on that is itself a completely extensible framework. And this is just speaking to the nature of the paradigm shift, of the modular aspect of building software, conscientiously for extensibility and with its bits decoupled. It's much easier for, third-party developers to play with that and add functionality to it. So the content targeting framework itself, the content targeting functionality itself is a framework built on top of a framework, which is Liferay. So we are massively still invested in the developer experience. So we're focusing a whole lot on tooling We're focusing a lot on decoupling the product, you know, on modularizing. We want to be able to have this cloudy microservices. It's not for the sake of the buzzwords. It's just for the sake that this is the most maintainable. This is the way that products are the most maintainable and the most scalable.
And maintainability and scalability all packaged into a very lightweight, fully featured portal type of offering. That's pretty compelling, especially when you add in some of the latest mobile and tablet rendering features as well. So anyways, thanks a lot, Ray. Thanks a lot, Julio. And I can't wait to see what'll be new in LifeRay Portal 8.